You are Locked On Clippers, your daily Los Angeles Clippers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to a new episode of the Locked On Clippers podcast. Today is Wednesday, January 31st, 2018, and I'm your host, Lucas Han. You can find me on Twitter at Lucas J. Han, and you can read my articles at ClipsNation.com, as well as on Twitter at ClipsNationSBN. Before we get started with today's show, we have some sad news. Former Clipper Rasul Butler and his wife, accomplished singer Leah LaBelle, were killed in a car accident last night. Rasul played for the Clippers from 2009 through 2011, starting a lot of games at small forward during his first season with the team and backing up rookie Al-Farouq Aminu in his second year. He played a total of 123 games with the Clippers, averaging just under 10 points per game and making 187 three-pointers. Until the Clippers acquired J.J. Redick a few years later, Butler held several of the team's three-point shooting records, and more importantly, Rasul was always held in high regard by his teammates and players around the association as a great all-around person. Today, our thoughts are with the family and friends of Rasul Butler, dead at age 38, and Leah LaBelle, dead at age 31. During today's episode, I want to take some time to briefly talk about the Clippers' loss last night to the Portland Trailblazers and what was kind of a really weird, surreal game for everyone involved, before then taking some time to reflect a little more deeply about Blake Griffin's time and legacy with the Clippers. So first things first, let's talk about the loss to the Portland Trailblazers last night. The Clippers come into the game, only 9 players available because of the injuries that they have, and because the new players from the Blake Griffin trade aren't active yet and ready to play. Tobias Harris, Avery Bradley, and Boban Marjanovic will all probably play their first Clippers game on Saturday. Aside from all of the emotional strangeness for the Clippers, they're just super shorthanded in this game. You basically take the lineup that they've had in the last few weeks, but instead of Blake Griffin starting at power forward, you slide Danilo Gallinari in at power forward. Gallinari, who has been out for over a month with a glute injury. Gallinari actually had a decent game. He didn't have any sort of huge impact, 15 points, 5 rebounds, but 6 of 12 shooting, 25 minutes. You know, he's probably on a minutes restriction coming off of that injury. But it was nice to see him have sort of a decent game and look like he belonged. He had a few nice drives to the basket. So overall, you know, a decent return for Gallinari, just not the kind of performance that the Clippers need in a game where they only have 9 players and they're playing against a playoff team in the Portland Trailblazers. Lou Williams, probably the biggest story of this game is Lou Williams having just a really horrendous night. And, you know, it happens. It's not like Lou Williams is a bad basketball player because he had one bad game. He's still having a tremendous season, but he ended up with 20 points and 5 assists, but he was 5 of 26 from the field and had 4 turnovers on his way there. And it was a game that, you know, got within 6 points in the last couple minutes. The Clippers ended up losing by 8. They were down by a little bit more than that for most of the second half and then kind of went on a run in the fourth quarter. They won the fourth quarter by 11 points, and that kind of put them back in the game in the closing minutes, where they were right in range where if they hit a couple shots, get a couple more stops, maybe it turns into a close contest down the stretch. But Lou Williams, 5 of 26 from the field, if he has even a normal night, you avoid that situation where you're playing from behind and you need a big run at the end of the game to try to get back into it. Some other guys, you know, Sindarius Thornwell had a pretty decent game being pressed into action, 9 points, 4-4 from the field. The Clippers really don't have a lot of options defensively against the Trailblazers. You know, Damian Lillard and CJ McCollum, obviously 2 star offensive guards, and the Clippers' 2 primary guards are Milos Teodosic and Lou Williams, neither of whom is really a notable defender. Tyrone Wallace got a lot of minutes on Damian Lillard and CJ McCollum. Sindarius Thornwell coming off the bench also got some opportunities there as well, but Thornwell ultimately, even though he had a good game in this one, probably still a guy who's not looking at being in the rotation when everything is said and done post-trade deadline and the Clippers go through this last stretch of the season. Montrezl Harrell, I thought, had a good game in this game. 15 points, 7 rebounds, 3 assists in 17 minutes off the bench. Kind of that high production that we're used to seeing from him. You know, it's a real shame the way his game is limited. kind of restricts him from being a functioning starting center in the NBA, just because he's kind of limited size-wise and overall defensively. Even though he's energetic, he's not that great of a defender, so he can't really anchor a team's defense because of those two things paired together, which is a shame because, you know, with the level of production he's having, most backup centers, if they were having this level of production, you'd feel pretty good about them taking over as the starter if DeAndre Jordan ends up being traded. But because of Montrez's limitations, you almost feel like you need to have someone else coming back in some sort of trade who can be the stopgap starter, because I don't think Montrez is really that guy. Wesley Johnson kind of continued having this weird season that he's been having. He had 5 points, 8 rebounds, 3 assists, a steal, and 4 blocks, which is like stat stuffer extraordinaire, kind of everywhere defensively. But then he was a team worst minus 15 in 27 minutes. So 27 minutes Wesley Johnson plays, the Clippers lose by 15. 21 minutes he's on the bench, the Clippers win by 7. Now, obviously, that's not the only factor there, and Wesley Johnson was playing a lot of his minutes with Portland's starters also on the floor. But, you know, I mean, it is something that does seem to be developing to a little bit of a trend, the Clippers not playing super well when Wesley's on the floor compared to other guys. Tyrone Wallace, I thought, had a really good game. 15 points, 7 of 13 from the field. Clippers used him heavily defensively. He had also chipped in with 3 assists. But it just kind of does worry me going forward, the lack of a shot. I think it, you know, he doesn't space the floor, really. He didn't, you know, he took 1 3 in this game and he missed it. I think probably that makes him more suited towards a bench role in the long term. Whether he's able to have a rotation role this season or not will depend on what guards are on the roster when everything is settled after the trade deadline. Because if it's Teodosic, Williams, Rivers, and Bradley, I think all four of those guys are probably pretty clearly ahead of Tyrone Wallace in the pecking order, although Tyrone could potentially still get some minutes as a backup small forward. But yeah, I think, you know, going forward into next season, and Tyrone's probably a guy that you'd like to keep around at 23 years old. He's got pretty good upside with the way his game is structured, and if he can develop that shot over the next couple of years, he could be pretty good. He's a guy who I think you look at more as a second unit guy going forward, even though he's been pressed into starting duty lately. Now, I mean, one more thing about this game is just that the Trailblazers shot 13 of 30 from deep, 43%. The Clippers shot 6 of 22 from deep, 27%. Damian Lillard was 5 of 10. Shabazz Napier came off the bench and hit a couple. Alfred Kuminu hit a couple. CJ McCollum, 3 for 7. On the Clippers' end, Lou Williams, 2 for 9. Gallinari, 1 for 4. Teodosic, 1 for 5. You know, these things add up, and ultimately, the team that shot the ball better in this game won the game, and that might be as important of a factor as any, even, you know, everything else that I talked about. And that's actually, I think, kind of a good sign for the Clippers, because the shooting will get better. Tobias Harris coming in is a very good three-point shooter. Avery Bradley has been a little iffy this season, but is a guy who's capable of shooting the three-pointer. Austin Rivers should be returning within the next few games, and Austin Rivers is definitely a guy who can shoot threes. So the Clippers are kind of in a position where the shooting, you know, talent-wise on the roster is going to improve going forward. And for them to be fighting with a playoff team, Portland, you know, 28-22 is probably going to end up in the playoffs this season and is 3 games ahead of the Clippers right now, I think it's pretty impressive for them to be able to put up that performance. So, I, you know, there's a lot to like in this game. I think it kind of does become a moral victory, even though it's hard to say that. I think if the Clippers had Tobias and Avery Bradley tonight and they lose the game by 8 and they shoot poorly, I don't think you can call it a moral victory. But considering the situation where the team just traded Blake Griffin, morale is weird, the big banners that the Clippers hang with pictures of their players to cover the Lakers championship banners, those were just replaced with black banners tonight because they couldn't put Blake Griffin up there anymore. And I mean, that's almost like the mood of that is almost like a funeral, right? Like very, very weird. So to get over that, especially for guys like DeAndre and Lou Williams, who know that they could very well be moved in the next week or so, and for the team to come out and have an overall good performance and scrap, and you really see that with guys like Tyrone Wallace and Montrezl Harrell, who just seem to bring energy and, you know, no matter what, compete every single night, I think it gives you a good feeling about the character of this team and some of the players on this team going forward. So overall, you know, I think it's probably a game that the Clippers can be pleased with, even though they lost. Next, I want to go a little more in-depth on discussing Blake Griffin's legacy after his 9 seasons with the Clippers. But first, though, I want to give a shout-out to some of the Locked On NFL podcasts that are doing tremendous work this week leading up to the Super Bowl. Make sure you check out Locked On Eagles and Locked On Patriots for all of your Super Bowl coverage. Now, fantasy basketball fans, listen up. If you love fantasy basketball, then you need to try my new favorite app, Draft. It's daily fantasy basketball, but not like the other guys. On Draft, you play real live snake drafts with other people, just like in your season-long league. Here's how it works. It's a draft that lasts for just one night, and there's no management. You just set it and forget it. Once you're done drafting, that's it. There's no trades, no waiver wire. Draft even takes care of last-minute injuries for you. Drafts start every couple of minutes, so you can go join one right now, and the best part is that you play for cold, hard cash. Drafts start from just $1, so there's a draft for everyone. No salary caps, and you play in a real-life snake draft, just like you play with your friends in your season-long leagues. So come and join me on Draft today. You can download the app at any time. Just search Draft in your app store and join a game in minutes, or you can play right from your computer on draft.com, whichever you want. For a limited time only, all new players get a free entry into a draft when you make your first deposit, but you have to use my promo code LOCLIPPERS. That's right, you can play a real money game for free just by using my promo code LOCLIPPERS on your first deposit on Draft. So the other thing I want to talk about in this episode is the legacy of Blake Griffin as he leaves the Clippers and how we think about these 9 years that he spent with the team. This was his 8th season, but remember, he didn't play in what was his real rookie year because of that knee injury that he suffered in the preseason. So really, he's been in the organization for 9 years, even though he only has 8 years worth of games played. So I don't really have like any sort of pre-planned structure for this, although I do generally know what I want to talk about. So we'll see how long this segment ends up going for, and it's probably going to be what we end the show on. But I wrote a column on ClipStation.com that I think you guys should check out. A lot of people seem to be liking it. I'm pretty proud of it. And it's called Thank You, Blake, and it kind of deals with this same question. So I highly encourage you going and checking that out, maybe gaining a little bit of a perspective on what I'm talking about. And, you know, let me know what you think as well. Of course, tweet at me at Lucas J. Han, email me lhan.clipstation.com. What do you think about Blake Griffin's legacy? How do you remember the 9 years that he spent with the team? Not talking about if it was a good trade or not, whether the Clippers won or lost the trade, whether the Clippers should have traded Blake or should have kept him, but just now that he's gone, how do we remember the last 9 years? For me personally, I think that the legacy of Blake Griffin has to be looked at in two parts, and I think it's really, really incomplete to not consider both of these two things when you talk about what he did in his 9 years with the Clippers, what he meant to the fan base and organization, and what his accomplishments were and his shortcomings. So I think the first thing that you have to acknowledge, that maybe probably a lot of people in national media might not, is the change that he inspired in the organization. From when he did his first pre-draft workout with Mike Dunleavy Sr., who was GM and coach of the Clippers at the time, in 2009, like 6 weeks before the draft, I think. When he did that workout, he came in, they let season ticket holders come and watch the workout. Everyone knew that he was going to be drafted first. I think Mike Dunleavy actually got in trouble for telling reporters that, yeah, this is the guy we're going to take with the first overall pick, because the NBA wants there to be, you know, intrigue going into the draft. But from that day, Blake Griffin brought a level of hope to the Clippers and the fan base that hadn't been there before. And yeah, there had been inklings of it. It had started to change. They had, you know, the really young, exciting group with Darius Miles and Lamar Odom several years before. A couple years before that, they had had the Elton Brand group that managed to make it to the playoffs. But Blake Griffin was different. It felt like the Clippers were getting LeBron, and not like they were going to sign LeBron, like as if you signed LeBron in the summer of 2018, but when you drafted 18-year-old LeBron from high school, That's what it felt like the Clippers were getting with 20-year-old Blake Griffin from Oklahoma. It felt like they were getting this young, athletic superstar who was going to blossom into one of the best players in the NBA. And that's a feeling that Blake Griffin was good enough to sustain for quite a bit of time. When he went into his first summer league, we see this guy, he's 6'10", he's a man among boys underneath the basket against these guys who have NBA experience, but then at the same time, he gets a rebound, and he's doing dribble moves, running the break, hitting jump shots, finding guys in transition, throwing no-look passes, all of these things that you would be excited if a 6'3 guard was doing in his rookie summer league, Blake Griffin as a 6'10 forward was doing. And, you know, he hurts his knee in preseason of his first year. We are delayed from seeing him for a year, and it sucks, but it feels like a temporary setback. And then I think as soon as his rookie year kicks off, we definitely can validate that fear that it was a temporary setback, because he scores his first basket of his NBA career a few minutes into his first game on an alley-oop dunk. He has 40-point games in that season. The Mozgov dunk comes in the first month of his rookie year. He has a 47-point game against the Pacers that spring, which is still his career high. And without Blake Griffin, the Clippers don't sign the free agents that they need to sign in the next couple years to compete. Chris Paul doesn't put the Clippers on the list of teams that he wants to play for when New Orleans is trying to trade him if Blake Griffin isn't there. Doc Rivers doesn't come to the Clippers without Chris Paul and Blake Griffin already there. Steve Ballmer doesn't buy the team if not for that process that Blake Griffin started. And, you know, Blake didn't really have much of a choice. The Clippers drafted him. He went to play for the team that drafted him. That's what everyone in the NBA does. But that doesn't mean that I don't think that necessarily diminishes the impact that he had once he was here. And that impact is very, very real. Chris Paul may have been more important to the Clippers' success in the last few years than Blake Griffin. I think that, you know, probably he was more important to the on-court success than Blake Griffin was over the last 5 or 6 years. But Chris Paul would have never been a Clipper if it wasn't for Blake Griffin. And so in many ways, Blake was more responsible for that turnaround in the organization than any other individual. Even though he didn't have the choice to come here, you know, I think that's actually kind of the point, because anyone who had the choice to come to the Clippers or not wasn't coming. For years and years and years, this was always the case. Blake Griffin didn't have the choice. He had to come. And once he came, all of a sudden, it was a place where people wanted to come. It was like Chris Paul choosing to be traded to the Clippers was not a thing that happens in Clippers history. Doc Rivers, who won the championship a couple years before and was one of the most coveted coaching names on the market, choosing to come to the Clippers is not a thing that happens in Clippers history. One of the richest men alive, who is willing to spend to build a winning team and is energetic and sits courtside and roots for the games and is, you know, beloved, wanting to come by the Clippers is not something that happens in Clippers history. The Clippers being shown on SportsCenter as a team that has highlights and is an exciting young team with upside instead of just someone that they're laughing at is not something that happens in Clippers history. And it's something that happened once Blake Griffin got here. The entire dynamic changed. And I think if you look at the difference in the Clippers, if you've been around following the team since then, the difference in how the franchise is viewed and the franchise's culture from June 25th, 2009, which is the day that Blake Griffin was selected with the first overall pick in the NBA draft by the Clippers, to January 29th, 2018, which is the day that the Clippers traded Blake Griffin to the Detroit Pistons, I don't think you can overstate how different it is. It's like two totally different organizations and teams. Literally right down to the fact that the coach, the front office, the ownership is all different. Much of the fan base is new since then. The only guy who was there then who's there now really in the whole organization is DeAndre Jordan and Jason Powell. That's it. So, it's not really possible to overstate that impact that he had. Now, on the other hand, that doesn't paint a complete picture of what went down, because a lot of stuff happened in those 9 years. And ultimately, the Clippers didn't win a championship in those 9 years. And that's not a crime in and of itself, because a lot of teams don't win championships. Very few teams do, actually. Very few players, even number one picks, very few players are good enough to be the best player on a championship team over the course of their career. But beyond not winning a championship, there are ways in which Blake Griffin's time with the Clippers were disappointing. And I think, like, just as it's important to acknowledge how much he changed the organization in his 9 years and how much change he inspired, I think we also should probably talk a little bit about how we'll remember the disappointments from Blake Griffin's 9 years with the Clippers. For me, every high that Blake Griffin brought, from the highlights to the playoff wins, the 50-win seasons, was accompanied by a low. Repeated injuries, seemingly every year in the postseason, and then in the last few years, missing big chunks of regular season games as well, aren't something that's Blake's fault by any means. But you can't tell the story without saying how many playoff runs were basically, we had our guts ripped out when the Clippers players went down with injuries. You can't talk about the Blake Griffin story in Los Angeles without a late night punch in Toronto, where he had been out drinking and got upset with the Clippers equipment manager and broke his face with his hand. Broke his hand on his face. I don't believe the Clippers equipment manager broke his face from the punch. But Blake Griffin definitely broke his hand. And aside from being suspended 5 games for that incident, he missed many more than that with the broken hand. And it derailed his season. It derailed his reputation. It was a huge distraction for the team. I don't think we can ignore the fact that Blake Griffin seemingly was not super well liked by the people around him in a lot of cases. I think probably it's not as severe as the Chris Paul thing, where Chris Paul had a much more grating personality, but it's hard to ignore the fact that Chris Paul and Blake Griffin didn't get along, and Blake Griffin, it seemed like, was very, very vindicated when he beat Chris Paul in Chris Paul's return to Staples Center a couple weeks ago in a way that implied that, you know, there's kind of bad blood going both ways. And when the Houston Rockets players came into the Clippers locker room to do whatever they were trying to do after that game, one of the guys they were going in there angry at was Blake Griffin, and it wasn't just Chris Paul. And Blake Griffin's a guy who's taken hard hits his entire career. He certainly has not had a friendly relationship with referees. And after this whole Clippers-Rockets debacle, one of the reports that we heard from the national media was that Blake Griffin was a guy that players in the NBA were getting fed up with his quote-unquote antics, you know, along with Austin Rivers. I don't know what any of that necessarily means. It's all very vague, and it can come from one player with an agenda leaking something to a reporter, but there were tensions during Blake Griffin's time with the Clippers, there's no doubt. And a lot of that, I think, came due to failure, because the organization, as it grew up with Blake Griffin, I think they really did stop having fun. And it's something I think that has been talked about sort of in passing for the last several years, that the team just isn't as fun as they used to be. It's something we felt over, J.J. Redick had remarked on it over his time with the team. Jamal Crawford, I think, has mentioned it before. And I think there's probably no better way to embody that lack of having fun than, you know, a Chris Paul saying, which is that he hates to lose more than he loves to win. And when you look at it through that framework, a lot of what happened to the Clippers over the last 5 years is what happens when you hate to lose more than you love to win, because they weren't willing to make moves to switch up the team, aside from making, you know, a signing here or there on the edges, even though they for a long time weren't really in championship contention and never got out of the second round. They weren't willing to make moves that had, you know, a high upside and high downside, because they didn't want to risk the downside. They didn't want to lose more games. They hated the idea of dropping from third or fourth in the conference to sixth or seventh in the conference more than they loved the idea of moving from third or fourth up to first or second. I mean, Chris Paul at the end of games would sit on 22 seconds of the shot clock before taking a contested jumper because he was trying to bleed the clock to hold on to a late lead instead of go and get a bucket and win the game proactively. I think as a fan base, we saw a lot of times that instead of celebrating wins and highlights, there was this sort of sense of muted entitlement. But when there was a loss or an injury or a move made by the front office that fans didn't like, there was a lot of loud and vicious opposition and discontent. I think the whole organization, from top to bottom, front office to fan base, kind of embodied the hate to lose more than love to win. And there was no fun. There really was not a lot of positive energy in the organization for several years. And Blake Griffin, you know, had a role in that. Whether, I don't know, you know, in the locker room, what sort of tone he was setting. If I think that that is something that we can kind of attribute to Chris Paul. Blake Griffin may have been involved in some sense or not, but I don't think it's necessarily something we can pin on him. But just the repeated letdowns in the playoffs that built that tension year after year, where the Clippers more and more every season were coming in with high expectations, so scared to lose, so scared to fail. And Blake was a part of those failures, and he was someone who psychologically, I think we saw it have a big effect on, where he stopped going to the rim because he was afraid of getting hurt. He was the guy who really notoriously froze up late in games for quite a bit of time. He got better, I think, this season, where he had some big late game performances this season with the Clippers. But for the last couple of years, when the team had higher expectations, Blake is a guy who definitely, we would say, froze up late in games. So, I mean, the duality is there. This organization would not be where it is today without Blake Griffin. But we also probably can't ignore, when we evaluate his career, we look at Hall of Fame credentials, which is something we'll do someday, retiring his jersey, which is something we'll do someday. His teams, you know, the Chris Paul Blake Griffin era was a disappointment. It was a letdown. They didn't do what they were supposed to do. They didn't do what we expected them to do. They didn't meet their own standards for themselves. Not winning a championship is, you know, nothing severe. Most teams, like I said, don't win championships. But I think not making a Western Conference final is kind of damning with the amount of talent they had for the amount of years that they had it together. So at the same time, I think Blake Griffin's jersey, by the way, is going to be in the Staples Center rafters someday. The Clippers have to retire his jersey because of what he meant to the organization over those 9 years. But it really, really is difficult, I think, to evaluate it as a whole when you say, yeah, he was a disappointment, but he was also probably the best thing that's ever happened to this organization. And I think that, you know, we probably have to be comfortable with both. So I hope that, kind of by talking it out, that's something that we can become comfortable with, where we don't need to jump to the defense of the Blake Griffin era if we love him, and we don't need to disregard the massive cultural changes that he made in the organization during his time here if we're upset that he lost in the playoffs. I think that both of those things are true, and we kind of have to be able to live and have a discourse around both of them. So hopefully that's something you guys agree with me on. It's something that, a way that we can frame the discussion going forward. That's going to do it for today's episode of the Locked On Clippers podcast. As always, if you have any comments, questions, or feedback, feel free to hit me up on Twitter at LucasJHan. You can email me lhan.clipsnation@gmail.com. Make sure you read my work at clipsnation.com and follow along on Twitter at clipsnationsbn. Thanks for listening. This is Lucas Han signing off for Locked On Clippers.